It's a good time, gal. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Good Time Gal. I'm your host, Caitlin Palufo. Thank you so much for tuning in. This week on the podcast, we have Johnny Taylor, who is just a treat. He's a sweet man. We worked together at the Comedy Fort in Colorado. We had a great time. He's a man after my own heart. The end is really fun. We talk about strippers, male strippers. Okay, a beautiful change of pace. But it's super funny, super fun. He's great. You can catch him on Instagram at Hipsterocracy, HIPSTEROCRACY. Oh boy, that is a mouthful, and I just realized I don't know how to spell hipster, so that's upsetting for me. I'm an idiot. Okay, anyway, listen to this, have fun, tell a friend, rate, review, subscribe, the whole shebang. Follow the pod at Good Time Gal Pod. Follow me at Caitlin Palufo. This weekend I'm going to be in Bristol, Tennessee, headlining the Blue Ridge Comedy Club. October, I think it's like 9th and 10th, I'll be there. So please come show up if you are in the area. The following weekend, I'm going to be in D.C. opening for Mateo Lane at the D.C. Draft House. So that'll be fun. And all other dates are on my website. So check that out. And thank you so much for listening. And please enjoy Mr. Johnny Taylor and his, his ness. Johnny Taylor ness and my ness. Ah, fuck. You know, I need to stop trying to be so creative with words, you know? Just fucking dance, monkey, you know? Anyway, enjoy the pod. Bye-bye. Holy shit. Hello, Johnny Taylor. How you doing?
Caitlin, I'm fantastic. It's good to see you.
It's great to see you. I mean, it's been forever.
Since June?
Yeah, so, since June. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were in a sweet Colorado together.
Oh yeah, Colorado, where even when I was still a little afraid of COVID, they had no fear.
No. They were burning masks up there, basically.
It was wild. But that was a fun weekend. Got to do a bunch of shows, and they were all good, if I remember correctly. Yeah, most of them.
Yeah, they were all fun.
I think I had a weird one in Boulder that I didn't love, but other than that, yeah, they were great.
I think we all had a weird one in Boulder because yeah. I was on that show with you and I was like, that was a weird one, huh?
Yeah, Boulder had some weird, a weird vibe to it, but still fun. And people came out, all the mm-hmm. shows were pretty much sold out. So, and crushed it.
Yeah,
as,
you did.
As we do.
Oh my, we're a dream team, you and me.
Yeah, that was so fun.
I set them up, you knock them down. We have a good time.
I loved, sometimes you go and do these shows on the road. Mm-hmm. And they put you with some moron that's terrible. And I was so delighted that not only were you hilarious, but also fun to hang out with, because sometimes, goddamn, they book you for some shitheads.
Oh, my God. Well, after that, our last night together, that sounds very after our last night together, we went to a very 22-year-old haunt of Fort Collins, where it was just like a club / pizza parlor. Like, it was very bizarre.
Yeah, it did feel strange. I felt very old. I remember that.
But you were the best dressed one there.
It wasn't hard. There was I remember the girls were dressed to the nines, and then every single guy was just dressed like a complete slob.
Yeah, they were a lot of basketball shorts and a lot of slides. I remember being like,
"Who's slider?"
It's Saturday night, and you came to the club like this. Wow! All right, and we had the most gorgeous waitresses on the planet.
They were great and very like attentive. Mm-hmm. They were good waitresses. Mm-hmm. You know, the funny thing was is that people listening out there, we didn't go here on purpose. It was literally the only place to get food.
I want to see 22-year-old dick in.
It was like the only place you could get a meal in Fort Collins after midnight. It was so strange.
Yeah, it was very bizarre. And it was just, it was very strange. And yeah. the most beautiful waitresses. And I remember being like, you can get out of here. You know, like right. you don't have to be a 10 in Fort Collins. You're a 10 everywhere. Get out.
Right. Right. Yeah. Fort Collins was a strange little town, but mm-hmm. boy, they were there for the stand up.
Yes, they were. Great crowds.
Great crowds. I was like, let's hang out here. I don't want to see, I don't want to see anybody outside of here.
I know. Right. And the bar setup, the club setup was great. David did amazing. A great job. He did a lovely job.
Yeah.
And that's all we're going to say about that.
You know, Dave's not only a great comic, but he really takes kind of what comedians would want in a club and incorporate it into that space. So it's fun, and the beer was flowing, and it was those were good nights.
Yeah, we had a nice time, huh?
It was fun. It was
and then
fun.
I found out that you are actually from California, which
California.
Is exciting yeah. because I am from California. Yeah. I think that's why we were fast friends.
Right. And did you start in San Francisco?
No, I wish. I started in New York.
Okay. But did you live in San Francisco, if I remember correctly? Yeah. Or near there, Bay Area?
Yeah. San Bruno. Shout
okay.
out.
Okay. What's up, San Bruno?
We got the airport and the cemetery. Thank you.
That's all you need.
Yeah. You either leave there or die there. One of the two. But I'm from San Bruno, went to school in San Diego, and then moved to New York and have been there ever since.
Okay. Yeah. I'm from Sac, and I was born in Riverside, which is down south, but.
Oh, I know Riverside.
Spent. Oh, do you?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I went on a college recruiting trip there.
Oh, sounds so nefarious. Oh, I know Riverside.
Oh, I know Riverside.
Lost a lot of friends in there. I most of my life I lived in Sac, and I lived in LA from 2016 to 2019 and moved back to Sac right before the pandemic hit. And I'm so glad I did, because LA was literally a cesspool of sadness during the pandemic. Happy to not be there.
It usually is just a cesspool right. of sadness, but it's just masked with Botox and high heels, you know, and taco shops, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, Sacramento is a different kind of sad.
Sacramento is just sad. There's this like there's a consistency to it, you know.
Yeah.
LA, it's like people were bummed out. They're like, we don't have any red carpets to be on. You know, there was this sudden emptiness to the emptiness, you know, where there,
no validation to the emptiness, right?
Right, right. Yeah. Where Sac is just, you know, we're just kind of happy and comfortable being kind of empty, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. My sister lives in Woodland. Which is about 20 minutes away from Sacramento.
I'm so familiar with Woodland. I used to clean an office building. I did janitorial work in my 20s. And I used to clean an office building in Woodland. And it was one of my best paydays of the whole month.
Really?
So, yeah. I did twice a week. I did a big clean on a Sunday. And then Wednesday I'd go in and I'd just take the trash out. And it paid me decent. And
yeah.
So I have vivid memories of traveling to Woodland to clean an office building, because stand-up comedy is glamorous.
Yeah. Were you doing stand-up by then?
No, I stopped doing that job maybe a couple years before I started doing stand-up. Mm. But, you know, doing janitorial work twice a week is such a stand-up comic job. It's just something where it doesn't occupy a lot of time, but gets you a little bit of money. It's always funny talking to friends about all the jobs they've had, mm-hmm. you know. And then there's people like Posehn, where I'm like, what was your last real job? And he's like, I was 19 working at Tower Records. And he's like a TV writer and an actor for literally the last 30 years. I'm like, fuck you, dude.
Yeah, he's got a few houses in Sacramento if he want it.
Right. Yeah. But he does not have the desire to.
No. Yeah. No. So growing up in Sacramento, what part? Or no, you grew up in Riverside. When did you move to Sacramento?
I didn't really grow up in Riverside. I was born there, but I ended up in Sacramento because my fam. Well, I moved to Reno first. So I lived in Reno. Reno. What a nightmare. You know, Reno has the highest teen suicide rate.
Oh, and, God.
And you know why? It's because there's nothing to do. Other, like, your parents are drunk at the casino. Mm-hmm. And so, and there's nothing for kids to do. I remember I read an article. I was like 7 or 8. And their paper, it was called the Reno Gazette Journal. Mm-hmm. I remember on the front page, it said Reno World. It's going to be like Reno's Disneyland. Uh-huh. I was so excited. I was like, oh my God, I might not have to commit suicide. And then and then it never, to this day, it never happened.
Reno World never, failed. Oh no. Never,
I don't think they fucking dug a shovel in, Kayla. There was, yeah, nothing. They never even, it was like somebody's idea and they're like, make it on the front page.
So little strange. Did they know you could have, they had little boy, little Johnny's dreams in their hands and they just couldn't care enough to put down a shovel.
Probably so many kids were just like, oh, finally. But then we moved to SAC and I was probably 12 or 13 when we moved to SAC, but then I was there for, you know, 25 years.
And now family, who was it? Was it your parents, both parents?
So I moved, my mom, she's dead now. Both of my parents are dead, but my mom, before she was dead, she was crazy. And so she was in and out of like mental hospitals my whole upbringing.
Oh, so you mean like legit?
Yeah. And you know, I remained very close with her, but you know, she was not really there a lot when I was a kid. So I ended up, she was having some problem. And then my dad and her were trying to figure it out. And so I just moved in with my brother in SAC. So they were still in Reno. So I lived with my brother for a couple of years while they were kind of just working it out. And then I ended up, they ended up moving to Sacramento and I moved back in with them. And then, the rest is history. You know, I moved out early though. I got a job. I dropped out of high school, got my GED. I started working because I just could not, like, the living environment was super unhealthy for me. So yeah. I just moved out super early and started getting married to girls and getting divorced a bunch of times. And then
this might be my favorite fact about you is that you have been married a bunch.
Yeah. three times. And
you're not that old. Like, you're young.
I mean, I'm starting to be pretty old. that is, it used to be like, and I'm young, but now it's like three times and I'm kind of old now, but I'm fairly young, but you know,
fairly young to have three ex-wives.
Believe in love, Caitlin. You know, when you believe in love, you just keep making mistakes to support it, you know.
Now, while you were in high school, were you like hip? Did you have friends? Going to parties?
I did. So I was big into, I became really big into boxing. So I was, I was an amateur boxer from 13 to 19. So I was really, that's all I did for like my teenage years was box. But that was my first dream before being doing stand-up. I really wanted to be a pro boxer. I had a friend group, you know, for sure. Mm-hmm. But then I really dropped out of school because my home life was so not stable.
Yeah.
You know, so I was just like, dude, what's the quickest way to like make money for myself?
Yeah.
So I dropped out and then I got my GED and I got a work permit and just started working. At 16, I started working at Tower Records. And then when I was 18, I went and got a job at Borders Books and Music, RIP, both those companies.
Yeah, you're putting those in the ground.
Right, man. Marriages and and corporations just dust beneath my feet.
Yeah, you're fighting that patriarchy. I like it.
Right. Whether I want to or not.
Yeah, even though you are the patriarchy.
Yeah, right, exactly. Makes so much sense, too. So, you know, at that point, but I had friends. I wasn't really like, you know, I didn't have like a terrible school experience or anything.
Yeah.
I just really didn't have time to do it. I was like, I need to start making money and I'm not making any money here.
Yeah, I get that. And When was the first time you drank? Was alcohol a big in your family or no?
No, not huge. My dad would have the occasional beer, and my mom didn't drink at all. But I started drinking as like a kid, you know,
a kid,
13 or 14, you know, where I was like, there would be certain friends that I had that their parents were like, let the kids have a couple of Tecatis, you know what I mean? And I've noticed like hanging out with them like quite a bit. And then you just start, I'll never forget one time I was, it was the first time I ever played poker, and my friend John and the John and Bobby, they had their mom was this gal named Lisa, and she had like this new boyfriend named Hector.
Okay.
Mexican dude, such a crack up dude, like one of the funniest people I've ever met in my life. But I was like 14, and they were like, he was like, we're gonna teach you how to play poker. So like the whole family was playing poker, and then we were just drinking all these beers. And then Hector's like, have you ever tried tequila? And I'm like, no, I'll try it. You know, I'm clearly a man at 14. I'll drink some tequila. And I remember they were like doing shots and stuff. And, you know, we're all playing. Everybody's got their cards out. And I just puke all over the like all over the card table. Talk about party foul supreme. Like, you know, just some 14-year-old puking all over your poker chips. It was such a scene.
Oh, puke on felt? Like just
yeah,
on
it was,
the
it
felt?
Was like a, yeah, felt. It was so bad. And you know, the worst part too is, you know, I was still like a little kid basically. Mm-hmm. So, you know, right when I puked, I just started bawling. I just started weeping because I was like, I'm like the puking, crying, drunk 14-year-old nightmare.
Oh no. What did Hector say?
He was super cool about it. He was just at his heart, just like a nice guy that obviously had terrible ideas about like teenage drinking. But I remember he just like kind of grabbed me and like, he was like, I'm not going to send you home like this. And I'm like, yeah, thanks. Cause my dad would come over here with a gun. So he just kind of put me with, in a sleeping bag. He didn't like zip it up and like throw me in the river or anything.
What does that mean?
He like just got me like a sleeping bag to nap it off. And I remember waking up the next day being like, what the fuck happened last night? Everybody being like, well, you had too much tequila. And you know, when you're 14, too much tequila is probably like one shot with a Tecate chaser. So.
Oh God.
Not my proudest moment, but something I still to this day will think about and be like, why was I getting fucking shit housed with like,
I mean, why not? Okay. Right, you're 14. That's when you're supposed to make those kind of mistakes.
Oh my God.
That's when you get to puke on a felt poker table.
Right. There's no other time that you can.
No, if you do that at 34, then you're going to have an intervention, you know?
That's so true.
No shame. Don't have any shame about that.
Yeah. That's like my first like really drinking memory. I mean, I've had a million since, but you know, and I honestly don't drink that much anymore. And I'm not sober or anything. Mm-hmm. I'll have a couple beers, you know, at a show or before a show. Do you drink before a show at all? Or
I can't. Yeah.
Okay.
If I drink before a show, I get two in my head and I think about the drinking. And then if I stumble on my words, I take it twice as hard as if I didn't, you know, I just get too. It probably doesn't affect me at all. You know, but it does affect me mentally. So.
Gotcha.
What about you?
I will for sure. Yeah. I'll have a couple beers prior to the show and then I'll take one up on stage with me.
Oh, I noticed that about you. A little cool Budweiser fella.
Yeah. Coors Light. If everything's going well.
Yeah.
And the club has Coors Light. Sometimes they don't, which is, will really throw me off. Like, I can't take a silver bullet on stage with me. Are you out of your mind?
I like that you call it a silver bullet.
Yeah.
That's the name of a vibrator. Did you know that?
No, I didn't, but you know.
Yeah, there's a silver bullet. It's about 3 inches long, and it's supposed to look like lipstick.
Oh, okay.
And women carry it in their purse. That was my first vibrator.
That's awesome.
Well, so every time you drink a Coors Light on stage, I want you to
I'll never forget
my 18-year-old pussy.
I'll never forget. That's the 9/11 of your pussy. I will never forget. Coors Light, PBR will be a good replacement for a Coors Light, but I like beer. I always say I like my whiskey expensive and my beer cheap. Like I like really expensive whiskey and I love just like water beer. So PBR, Coors Light, anything of that nature.
I had a friend in college call it sex in a canoe. Fucking close to water. Yeah,
that's so funny. I've had people, there's other ones for old Coors Light. But I just like it because I enjoy it and I like to drink a lot when I'm having like beers. Mm-hmm. So if it's like a really, like there's people that drink like stouts and like really thick porters and stuff. And I'm like, I can't get through a thimbleful of this without wanting to puke like I'm a 14-year-old at Hector's. You know?
Yeah. It's like cake. It's like drinking cake.
Yeah, I can't stomach even some IPAs. I'm just like, oh, I can't do this.
I don't want to chew my beer. That sounds awful.
I'm a lager person. I've realized I like a lager or I like a pilsner. Mm-hmm. But when we start getting into like the fancy shit, I just can't even deal.
Now, I want to know about you boxing. That seems crazy to me because it's so... Yeah. It's like the antithesis of who you are now.
I've always been pretty chill, but I've always loved fighting sports. So what I did in Reno, there's nothing to do but crime and drugs. You know what I mean? When you're like a teenager. So my dad was like, oh, you should go down to this boxing gym. Mm-hmm. And the police athletic league gym, which means that you paid a really small like monthly fee. And I could basically stay there all day. You know, it was like basically a babysitter that had like punching bags and speed bags and stuff. And I didn't like my first few days, but then I got really into it, you know, and then I was pretty good, you know, I was in good shape and I was, you know, it helped me not fuck up, you know?
Yeah.
So I went there literally every day for 3 years straight, 4 years straight. And then I started boxing in Sacramento for the Golden Gloves SAC and Police Athletic League in SAC, and wanted to become a pro. I went to get licensed as a pro when I was 19.
Oh, wow.
And I had a detached retina. And so they had to fix it. They fixed it. There's laser surgery they do that fixes it. But they wouldn't license me. And it was funny. The doctor was like, I know a guy that will license you after having the surgery, but it's, you're always going to be at like five times the risk of going blind in that eye or even possibly losing the eye if you, with blunt force.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would have been a good enough pro boxer to make it worth it. I would have been an okay pro, but I wasn't going to be like a champ. I was going to be like a journeyman, you know?
Yeah.
So I was like, man, maybe I'll figure something else out to do with my life.
But is that when you found comedy?
No, I still didn't. It was still 10 years after that, you know?
Oh, wow.
I started coaching boxing and then I co-owned a gym called Devastation Company with my friend, Brian Palmer, shout out Devco, who was one of the best kickboxers in California at the time. Mm-hmm. And so we opened an MMA gym and I taught boxing and managed some pro fighters. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, had a jiu-jitsu coach and a wrestling coach and we'd had seminars there. So before I was spending every night, you know, doing open mics and shit, I was at the gym. But then we ended up selling the company and to a larger gym. And then I didn't do anything for like several years. I was just trying to be a husband and work the 9 to 5, you know?
Oh, and wow.
And then I was like, oh, I should do an open mic, you know? And went and watched an open mic, and I was like, man, these people are terrible. Like, I have to at least be better than some of these people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I went back the next week, and I remember the day of the open mic, I wrote like three ideas down on like a piece of paper. And I was like, even then, like when I was brand new, my writing process hasn't changed. I just wrote three ideas down. I was like, I'll figure it out when I'm up there. And, and like developed, you know, it went well enough that I was like, oh, I should keep trying this. And then I remember the second time I invited a bunch of people to come watch me, and I just ate shit.
Oh no.
And like all my friends were like, yeah, nice try, idiot. You know? We always knew you were going to suck at this, but,
oh, fun friends. They're
yeah.
Great.
Yeah. 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 I remember it was extra sad because they looked so embarrassed for me, you know?
Oh no.
It was like, they didn't even feel bad, like necessarily, like, because they had to watch something shitty. They just, they just look like sad for me. Like,
that's the worst.
It sucked, but I ended up getting better.
Oh, thank goodness. I can attest, you got better.
Thanks, Caitlin. That'd be sad if you were like, oh, and then I worked an entire week with you, and I gotta be honest, you still have some work to do.
I was also embarrassed for you.
yeah, right, and all my friends were.
Now, is drinking big in the boxing MMA community? I've heard stories of them being very disciplined.
Yeah, for the most part. But that's the thing about fighter types, is that they'll be real good for like months and months at a time. And then they'll have like a fight. And then, but after that fight, for that night and many nights after, they go bananas like you've never seen before.
Yeah.
You know, they just go like complete savage animals. Brian Palmer, I mean, my partner with the gym, we would go out and we would get, he owns a brewery now. if that gives you any idea.
Yeah. Okay.
We would go out and just get shit housed. you know, long nights at the gym, or we'd have a guy that was fighting in like a cool event. And after the show, we'd get fucked up. But yeah, I think fighters are super disciplined until they don't have to be for a week, and then who knows what'll happen.
Is that how you were as a fighter?
You know, I was like mostly a teen, so I always kind of like to party on the weekends, you know, but I wasn't like, you know, a daily drinker or anything, you know.
Yeah,
I just don't think I could do it, you know, while still trying to be athletic, you know.
Yeah,
fuck, you know, I'm old enough now that like I second guess, you know, if I go out trying to have a good time, I will, you know, think about it real hard, because I know the next day is going to be so brutal for me.
Yeah.
Do you get super hungover, or are you like
In between? Like, if I'm old enough now that I know how to take care of it. Like, I can, I know if I have Advil and a cup of water before I go to bed, I'll be fine. But if I'm too drunk to think of that, the next day is miserable. It's awful. But I don't get that drunk anymore. You know, I don't get to the point where I don't remember or I even need it, you know?
Right.
So I'm just,
Good place to be. Like, I'm to the place in my life where I could take it or leave it. And my girlfriend's sober. So like, there's no like extra temptation there. You know, I will never I'll never really drink at home. I only really drink when I'm like doing shows or like celebrating something, which is a good place to be. 'Cause it wasn't always like that. There were times when I'd go out and just get blackout shitty, you know, for an entire weekend.
What does blackout shitty Johnny Taylor look like?
Not too different than just normal Johnny Taylor. Like, I'm always kind of just pretty even keel. And I know when I'm getting too drunk, but you know, I rarely make like very dumb errors in like decision-making when I'm super drunk. If I know I'm too drunk, I won't drive. I won't put myself in like a position of making terrible life-altering choices.
Yeah, that's good.
And I think that's just kind of a maturity thing. You know, there was a time when I would, but you know, if I get super shitty, most likely I'm just going to Irish goodbye wherever I'm at and end up at home.
Yeah.
You know, in bed, taking bong hits, watching, binge watching The Circle until I fall asleep. So
The Circle?
Oh man, have you been watching The Circle at all?
No. Who watches that?
Johnny fucking Taylor. I'm such a sucker for terrible television. I become like, very,
it's just like about influencing.
Well, you know, Caitlin, to to dismiss it with that kind of attitude would be doing a disservice to those well influencers. Yeah, it's a goofy, stupid social media show, but you know, I'm just trying to turn my brain off half the time, Caitlin.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Cut me some slack.
In the time of boxing, is there any time that you like did something embarrassing in front of those like macho men? Because I feel like it's a very macho situation, but you are not, I don't see you as like a big macho guy.
No, I'm really not. I never really was. But yeah, I mean, as far as drinking goes, no. I mean, one time I remember I had my parents out and I was fighting in the finals of the Police Athletic League super middleweight tournament. Mm-hmm. And I fought a guy named Shamari Johnson. I'll never forget. And this guy was so much quicker, so much stronger. And I remember he knocked me down in the first round and I got up. Mm-hmm. And then he had me in the corner. I remember he was talking to me and he was like, you have nothing. And I'm just, I remember like kind of like nodding in agreement. Like I became like completely subservient to him. I'm like, yes, you're correct, Shamari. And then he knocked me down again in the first round and I could have got up. And I remember just being like, nope, I've had enough.
Yeah.
And I remember my coach being like, you could have got up, couldn't you? And I was like, oh yeah. I was tired of getting hit, sir. So I just sat there until the ref counted to 10. So that was pretty embarrassing.
I could just imagine you just sitting there being like, hurry up, come on.
Yeah. Count. I was like 7, 8, 9, 10. It's cool. You don't have to say alligator in between them. Just yeah. Get to 10, buddy.
I just like that image of a man being like, one Mississippi, yeah, two yeah. Mississippi.
And I'm like, hurry it up, sir. Hopefully my dad still buys me a Slurpee after this.
Yeah. So now is the time I like to ask if there are any stories that we did not get to. Or are there any stories? Because I feel like you're kind of a guy, a jack of all trades. Like you got a story from one time when you were doing this, another time when you're doing that. I think it's going to be impossible to find, you know, to get there naturally. So I think you're going to have to spill the beans, bud.
I've got one that I think you know, the only ones that come to mind are ones that I'll still think about and be like, wow, that was a fucking disaster. It was my bachelor party.
Ooh. And
yeah, so I was getting, this is my second wife, Danielle. Hell yeah.
Okay.
And she had family in town because we were all, I mean, the wedding was a week away. So she had her family in town. They were staying with us. And so she went and had her little bachelorette party. Mm-hmm. And she even was like, we'd called each other early on in that night. I went out with her dad. her dad. And like four of my closest friends, two of them were fighter guys. One guy named George, he was like a 6'7" black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And we go out to a place called Club Toomey. It's this little dive bar in Sac, and proceed to get so drunk. So they had an old British style like a telephone booth, like a Doctor Who telephone booth. I remember I went inside there and just pissed in the telephone booth, but I wasn't facing the door. I went inside and I turned around pissing out of the telephone booth into the bar area.
That's so nice.
Little class act over here. And then needless to say, they get me out of this bar. Mm-hmm. And I end up at home. I don't have any recollection of any of this. Mm-hmm. Puking in literally every room of our house in Land Park, California. While Danielle's relatives were there.
Oh,
just
no.
Being like, yeah. Just must have been like, oh, wow. Danielle really did well for herself. This guy is this drunk monster puking in every room. Danielle gets home from her bachelorette party. Mm-hmm. George, the 6'7" Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy, is naked, just laying in our yard. Like, she pulls up to this guy, just naked in our yard, face down, asleep. And we still got married, Caitlin. So,
that's beautiful. It's a love story.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And that's, how long were you guys married?
Yeah, I know. I was like, that story ends in divorce. We actually were married. We were together 9 years. I think we ended up married for 6 or something. Oh,
that's a good long time, I'd say.
We had a good run.
That's a good run.
And I'm still friendly with all of them. So
what other bachelor parties did you have?
That was the only like proper one I had. Mm-hmm. For my first wedding, I just had like a get together kind of mm-hmm. thing, with some friends. I never really, that was the only one. I think I learned my lesson. I was just like, I can't.
Yeah.
Fucking do this. You know?
No strippers ever, huh?
There were. There were.
Which ones?
Which ones? So for my first wedding, my brother,
he was a stripper? Incredible. No. So no, progressive.
I I was like, I had my brother strip for me. It was crazy. There's a Pornhub search that covers that problem. Gary, we had like, I think the UFC was on, and it was back in the early days of the UFC when you had to kind of know how to see it, you know? So mm-hmm. Gary had ordered the UFC and then, had like a couple of strippers come over, and I remember the whole time just feeling very uncomfortable. I was just like, this doesn't seem good. I'll never forget the weirdest like stripper experience I ever had was with male strippers. I went to a friend of mine's bachelorette party.
Uh-huh.
And me and my friend Blake, we went and we were just going to be like chaperone, like make sure stuff doesn't get too weird.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, like the strippers come out and I'm like, oh, this is like, this seems like a good time. But mm-hmm. then they're fully naked. And then the bride to be just starts blowing the stripper. I'm like, am I here to stop this? I don't know what's happening. Like, is this, like, is this where I jump in? I don't know. Like,
you thought you were going to have to watch the strippers, but oh
right.
boy.
Yeah, I was just like, this has gone a direction I no longer feel comfortable with. And now I have like this, now I have this weird secret I have to keep, you know?
Are they still married?
No.
Okay.
No, she married the stripper. I kid, she did.
That would be a happy ending.
Right. I'm sure there was a happy ending at some
point. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very strange. That's alcohol.
Crazy.
Does wild things.
I've never heard that. You know,
now you have.
I also didn't think male strippers got completely naked.
Oh, these guys were butt naked. Like, they were. And fairly quickly too. It was like, there wasn't a courtship process.
Yeah.
They came out and they got right to it. And these gals were going bonkers. I've never seen people so excited in my life.
I've only seen one male stripper, and I was doing a comedy show. I was opening for him.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah. And it was at, I think one of the only two white girls, and I was doing the show. So it was like an urban, what they call quote unquote urban room or whatever. Mufasa was the headliner, who is the stripper.
Okay. And, I was like, from the Lion King?
Mufasa was headlining, and he died. His brother killed him.
I saw that story unfold.
Yeah. But it was my first time ever seeing a stripper. They're like, you have to stay and watch. And I was like, okay. But of course, I'm going up and they're waiting for the stripper. They're like, who is this bitch?
Right.
We want Mufasa. And I'm like telling my cute little jokes, and they're just like, whatever, we're about to see some dick.
Right. Bring on the dick.
So Mufasa comes out and he's wearing a G-string, and it's the biggest penis I've ever seen in my life. I mean, Jesus Christ, it was so long, and it was just right. I was just amazed. And the first thing he does is he sees me and he comes over and he goes, let's go, funny lady.
Oh my God.
He lifts me up and he flips me over and he just starts like dry humping me.
And no.
He starts shouting. He's like, are you laughing now?
Oh, who's my God. Like, no, I'm filing a police report. Oh my God.
It was the funniest thing I've ever been a part of. And they were clearly laughing at me, and it was fine.
Right.
Like, what am I going to not let this happen? Like,
right. Finally, I'm killing.
Yeah, I know. And just the amount of money that was just flying in the air.
Yeah, was there was so much insane. Money. Yeah, I remember that too. These guys had huge dicks too.
Yeah.
Like, that must be like the stripper requirement, because I remember being like, oh my God. Hello, nurse. But then I remember it's the money was ridiculous. Those guys probably made $2,000. So much money.
It was insane. And there was only like 15 of us. And I swear to God, he left with so much money for an hour's work. And and male strippers don't just like dance. They rub your tits, they grab your clitoris, and they're just like, they're in there. They're just like, and you're just like, and the women are like, yes!
Yeah, they're so into it. That was the thing. That was the best part of it was how into it they were. I was just like, wow, this is like, this is a real party, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah, there was hands everywhere, and he just dominated. And these women are just... so one woman was like, had gray hair and was clearly in her 60s, and she was just like, bring it on.
Right. Oh man. Oh, good times. Good
God
times.
Bless Mufasa, huh?
Oh, seriously, Mufasa giving his gift to the world.
I mean, he did at least two 15 ladies who really needed it.
Okay. Right, clearly.
Yeah, he dry humped the laughter out of me. I'll tell you that.
not a frown in the bunch.
Nope, not a single one. Oh my God. Well, Johnny, this was so fun.
It was.
We took a turn at the end, but I thought it was good.
Oh yeah, you know, do whatever editing you need.
Oh my God. Sarah, where can people find you, or do you have anything to plug?
I'm at Hipsterocracy on the Twitter and Instagram. I have a podcast myself called The Hard Talk, and it's on the Hard Times Podcast Network. Mm-hmm. For those of you that love the Hard Times punk rock satire stuff, if that floats your boat. And other than that, just come see me live. Hipsterocracy.com. I got my live dates on there. Mm-hmm. Going to Austin in a couple of weeks. If anybody out there listening is in the Austin area, opening for Eddie Pepitone on the 25th. And Post Sane on the 26th. Come out and see me. Creek in the Cave, and then Kick Butt Coffee. So.
Hell yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Johnny Taylor. Very fun to see live. So make sure you go and check him out.
Appreciate it.
And you have an album out, yes?
Oh, I got two of them. And a third one. I'm recording a third one soon. Just working that new hour right now, and I'm halfway happy with it. So, but yeah, it's on Spotify and iTunes and all the stuff. One of the first one's called Tangled Up in Plaid, and the second one's called Bumming with the Devil. And I think they're both pretty funny still.
There you go. That's all you need.
Pretty funny.
They're pretty funny.
Pretty good. They're a good time capsule of where I was at the time.
Yeah. Between marriage 2 and 3.
Right, exactly.
Well, thank you, Johnny. And
thanks, Caitlin.
I love you very much.
Awesome. Love you back. Good time, girl.